did at one time have a separate benefits administrator for the schools and for the town, and we merged those together again, too. So there's another way we're trying to make things more efficient for taxpayers. And I think that's the story that we got to tell, is what are we doing to make things more efficient. And we haven't always been successful at doing that.
I care for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, in your browser at WFPR.FM. Yes, in your browser. And in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial or maybe the knobs. You can preset to 102.9. That's the number. And it'll be ready for you anytime you need. Here in our glorious studio today with Max Margiello.
Oh, man, look
Max.
At that chandelier. Man, how'd you get that in here?
It's glorious, isn't
it? I know. The crystals and, you know, the gold-plated walls.
Which room are you in?
I don't know. Thank you for having me, Stephen. It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's absolutely good. And this is going to be, I think, for the record, the first council quarterbacking of this new term.
Oh, boy. So. And this is actually, I think this, I forgot to do my math, but this might celebrate our first 100 days.
Ooh, it's close.
It's
at
close.
Least.
It's close. It's coming up.
Yeah.
So
how has the first 100 days been?
Well, I think we started off the slow process of we're getting the goals done. We did, you know, I think for no matter what your opinion is, we did address the 444 East Central Street property.
True.
Surprisingly, we had an issue on marijuana policy, which I don't know how that got in there, but I think that was, we got that done.
I think the wording on that one in particular was nicely done.
Yes. But I think part of it is what goes on behind the scenes, and we've really done a good job of getting to know each other, you know, one-on-one, just, you know, building those bridges as a council, just so when we are ready to debate, we don't take things personally. We all, you know, and I think that is sort of a strength of this council, is that we are really trying to build those bridges. I think it's, we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, and I think we're laying the groundwork, and we're listening, we're asking questions, even if it goes over, that's why we're doing it, is because we're doing the work. And so, yes, those are long meetings, but I think that, we're hands-on, and I think that's an advantage this council has, that, like I said, even though it goes over, and I think that's something that you want to make sure we're paying attention, and that's what we're doing.
I would agree, and I've explained to others that clearly with 7 of the 9 new, you being one of those particularly, but anytime something comes up that's new, there's always going to be an additional explanation to make sure that you get kind of the content and the context. This is how it goes, and this is what you're going to do. Setting the stage legitimately, and granted, hopefully that those first times will gradually diminish as you go through the cycle. And clearly it's going to be a cycle. So the second year, you'll have gone through everything once, and now you'll be getting it the second time. And hopefully you remember, oh, yeah, we did that once upon a time. And the discussion then can proceed without having to go through the, in some cases, longer explanation to say, this is why you're doing it, this is what you're going to do, et cetera, et cetera. Because it can be complex. I mean, you are conducting on an oversight basis, oversighting the town business. Oh, and by the way, yeah, the school budget and an oversight dollar amount, but school committee, school district does the rest of that. So it's a big role. Absolutely.
I think one of the questions is you know, that some of the counselors have is, you know, right now we don't have the capacity for subcommittees, and whether or not having that first pass is going to sort of affect sort of the general meeting and our ability to sort of pre-screen some of the stuff that comes forward. I know some council is concerned about that. And then, you know, there's not as much room for deliberation in the main meeting, so you can't really get that grounding. So that's something that the council really has to tackle going forward, and I think that just comes down to staffing.
Yeah, and let's develop that two points. One, certainly the capacity for the subcommittees. Granted, you've got the capability. You can create a subcommittee, but then somebody has to execute it. And right now it's Jamie and Julie, and soon to be a communications person, but Jamie is still alone, and there's only so much he can do. So that, related to the budget, will certainly be an issue that the council is going to have to address in terms of how are you going to staff? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't staff that, then how do you do your business? Mm-hmm. Because you can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm. And that means we'll have to do it in the general meeting, which is why they're so long.
Which is why they're so long, right. Yeah. And then it's going to take a level of trust, which to your credit, at least you've acknowledged you're starting to build those relationships mm-hmm. so that if you do have three go off here, three go off there, they'll have done the bulk of the discussion, which is what I've at least seen with EDC and the capital budget and the other subcommittees. You can work out all the details, so you still have some discussion. But at least the subcommittee chair can say, we covered this, this, this. You'll have had a chance, hopefully, to have reviewed whatever the doc associated with it is. Ask the clarification questions and then, you know, move right in.
I think the other thing that makes Franklin unique is because we're a city town hybrid, we're the only city with a finance committee. And so, right. You know, when you have other cities that have, you know, subcommittees of the town council that do finance, they don't have that extra pass.
Right.
So that puts us in a stronger position.
It should. And I think that's something the council, hopefully this council in particular, will learn to leverage more because there are some financial questions that you should be able to ask of them to solve for you. Because respectfully, there's 9 specialists from the community in financial matters that respectfully, the bulk of you don't have. Mm-hmm. And if you can let them do the legwork and then bring you, call it, you know, 2 or 3 options, or this is the recommendation, and then you make a decision, mm-hmm. that theoretically should give us a better choice mm-hmm. and, you know, a quicker choice. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, yes, you could really noodle through it in a session, but then you're going to be going long sessions.
I think one of the things that I've, this is sort of an aside, a personal aside as a counselor, not representing the council, but, you know, I think that a lot of the decisions that come before the finance committee, there's the finance component to it, you know, are we spending, accounting for all the money, but there's also the political decision, you know, what are the trade-offs?
Agreed.
And that's something that I think we need to equip the finance committee to be able to better handle.
Yeah.
Because those are things that require economics rather than finance, or public administration rather than finance. And that's something that I want to make sure we have that expertise on there in the future.
And I think from my observation, that's something that can fairly easily be done, because respectfully, there's CFOs, CIOs, et cetera, on the finance committee. They're asking those questions in the commercial environment, mm-hmm. right, which is where they're getting their expertise. So it's the same questions that you would be asking. Mm-hmm. And what are the pros and cons? I think as long as that relationship between town council and FinCom mm-hmm. says it's not just do the dollars and pennies tie, mm-hmm. but are they within the realm of what we should do as a government, and at least allow us to then mm-hmm. make the policy decisions and the political decisions accordingly.
And that's the other thing is I know I've talked to some FinCom members who have been on the FinCom in the past, and they felt like they weren't as heard as much. And in terms of what the recommendations were, and I want to make sure that, you know, people who do the work, they've done that first pass, they should be recognized for that, and, you know, yeah. and their judgment should be, that doesn't mean that we should, you know, completely trust, you know, everything that is done and said, but we should definitely acknowledge the work that went into that, and, you know, if you have a committee that's assigned, you know, I think if you have a committee that's assigned to make a recommendation to the council, you know, you shouldn't just throw that out the window when it comes straight to you. So
I would concur.
Yeah. I mean, you still have to use your judgment. You still have to look in the best interest of the town, but I think you have to give weight to that. So, yeah.
Appropriate weight to that, and appropriate being what are they presenting to you? Okay, so generally it's kind of like a town administrator recommendation for this. They've said, okay, consider this, 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 and then we concur. And why, or we don't, and why. And now you at least have it succinctly from the trusted sources, and then you can go from there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see. It can be an evolution, and I've seen some FinComs, you know, have done better than others. And at least looking at this one, look at the resumes, and then hearing some of the questions, there's a good group there that you can certainly get leveraged from very absolutely. Appropriately.
Right.
For our benefit, because we're all in this.
And I think that's the other thing, too, is, you know, you're going to have the joint budget subcommittee. And, you know, I think traditionally, the people who have been on the council also have their own finance committee that are part of that same committee, so it might make it easier as opposed to just appointing different people to that.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't been decided yet.
Right.
Being able to have that cohesive school finance.
It needs to be a unified approach, and I know that's one of the things that we'll probably get a little bit more detail on, but at least there seems to be a consensus on actually not just having a five-year fiscal plan, but actually a strategy to work the plan. Mm-hmm. And that strategy has been missing because, if anything, we've had kind of the one-year strategy. For this year override or that year override, nothing strategic in terms of this is where we're going. This is how we're going to get there. And that, I think, is really, really needed.
And that, I think, brings us to sort of the budget that was on the agenda. And I think on one hand, I didn't bring it up at the meeting. I think I was concerned that we didn't really have a chance to discuss the revenue picture for this upcoming fiscal year and how to handle that. But at the same time, I do think that everyone's burned out in terms of looking at the future of the revenue piece. So I think that, looking at, the town administrator and his budget suggested using about $2 million or so of
free cash,
as well as, I think, an additional $100,000 or so of MECC stabilization money.
Oh, MEC stabilization.
Correct. I didn't get to ask about that at the meeting.
Right.
We can
cover that. I feel comfortable in answering that question.
There was some conversation at the meeting. There was some also about restoring some positions that were lost.
Right.
And I think it was the sense of the council that, we made these decisions, they have to stick, and, it doesn't make sense to hire someone and then have to let them go in one or two more years.
Mm-hmm.
So if we didn't do that, that would bring the budget, the free cash used down, $500,000 or so. I don't quote me on that.
Yeah. So as I understand,
so it's $2 million, and then would bring it down to
total of 4.5 free cash. Mm-hmm. 1.8 was part of the capital budget first pass tier one that was discussed last night. Two. So now we're at 3.8.
Mm-hmm.
Two would be set aside to potentially balance the budget.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then the leftover, which would be 0.5, 0.7, mm-hmm. I'm trying to do the mental math, would be part of phase two,
mm-hmm.
right? Which in prior councils, prior capitals, mm-hmm. they've always done kind of a first pass,
mm-hmm.
especially in the years where the snow and ice was not fully in the budget, because they would always set aside money for snow and ice.
Mm-hmm.
And, if it was a $3 million, $3.5 million, they would go $1.5 million for capital first pass, leave the other $1 million for snow and ice. Brutus and the snow and ice and the storms, depending, sometimes we would have then the second pass at $1 million. Sometimes you would have it at 500,000,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's where, at least structurally for this first full document of the capital plan, it gives 6 years laid out, tier one, two, three. And as Jamie indicated, they intend to get to 10 years laid out. So we'll always know what's coming because clearly, even on the DPW side, it's been referenced, whether it's 150, 220, hundreds of million that are works that need to be done. But realistically, one, they can't all be done at the same time because, one, we don't have the funding. Two, we don't have the resources. Nor would it be possible. But they're all on the plate, and they all need to get done. So bringing that concept to the table and then having it on a regular basis, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that having a plan in general, I think the theme of the night is we need a plan.
Yes.
I think I used that in your intro, Stephen. I think the other thing is, in terms of I guess the question is going forward for the town council, we'll probably see in May or June, do we hire back those additional positions? And I think that some of the positions were police, the two community service, community
SROs,
as well as the DPW staff. Was mm-hmm. it staff or?
I think positions? It was more
funding
materials related because.
Yeah.
DPW is unique to the extent that, most of the departments are 80% personnel, 20% expenses. They're the other way. It's more 60% stuff. mm-hmm. you know, road material, hardware, et cetera, and then, you know, mm-hmm. the people are still a key part of it, but.
And I think to Brutus, who spoke at the meeting, said, you know, this is going to result in deferred maintenance, and that's yes. going to cost you later down the road. And I definitely agree with that. I think you know, ultimately we need revenue to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the long game is to focus on how do we do that.
So if we go back to one of the points you mentioned earlier where you didn't get a chance to look at the revenue side to question some of the assumptions, et cetera, or at least understand more of the assumptions. If you recall, Jamie did that in, what, the second meeting in November, first meeting in December. So to his mind, he just did it. And this was kind of a refresh of the numbers, but not necessarily the approach. I was disappointed because I thought, especially since the group respectfully is new, a second time through that would have made a whole lot more sense to say, this is the picture, this is what we're building upon in order to do things. So yeah, that's where the $2 million comes in. The MEC stabilization, if you may recall, but I think it was 3, 4, maybe even 5 years ago, I'm losing track of time that way, but I think it was Millicent Medway came into the MEC. So it had been 4 initially, then 2 got added. There was a state grant that allowed that to happen. And as a result, we did not have to pay the same amount. What we did, because at some point in time we were going to be paying more, they used the money to put away into the stabilization fund so that as the grant went away, we could dip from that to bring back in. It's my understanding this may be like the last pot to bring back in, mm-hmm. which
is makes still sense. Is it still grant funded or is there still grant?
It was a grant for X number of years, so that's expired.
Okay.
And
so there's no need for the stabilization fund anymore because there's no
not
grant.
At this point, no. Okay. And as Jamie mentioned, I think potentially in some 2-3 years, whatever, another merger with mm-hmm. Foxborough and some other mm-hmm. communities will make the MEC an even larger mm-hmm. organization, bringing us greater right. efficiencies. But that's right. still down the road. Whether there's going to be grants with that or not, TBD.
Yeah, and this is a little wonky part I looked up. I believe this is correct. So if you draw from the regular stabilization fund, you need a 2/3 vote.
Correct.
So that, you know, if we were to do that, you would need a bigger percentage of the council on board to pass the budget.
Correct. You would need 6
with
at all
the
times.
The MEC stabilization fund is only a majority. So you don't have to worry about, no. you know, any political complications from
right.
that.
And while we have, I think it's, what, 6 or 8 stabilization mm-hmm. accounts? 4 specific, like the turf fields, mm-hmm. the fire truck, et cetera. Some of them are set like the MEC, mm-hmm. so it's easier to move in and move out. Mm-hmm. The stormwater, I think, will be another one, because clearly, as Brutus mentioned, we're now, what, 100 over the budget, yeah. and we still potentially have some more storms coming. So, mm-hmm. yeah, we're going to use that to balance this year's budget.
Yeah.
As opposed to going to the real quick rainy day fund, mm-hmm. yeah, that does require 2/3 vote to both put in as well as take out.
I think the other sense, you know, I got from the staff is that they really just want some certainty. Oh. And it's really hard on them to have this uncertainty about are they going to be cuts or they're not going to be cuts. I tried to, I kind of wung it and made a motion to try to see if we could get some clarity, and that didn't even get a second. But but it was kind of not very clear.
I think
it really was too early. So
I appreciated the intent.
Yeah.
But yeah, given that this wasn't even the full right. budget, this right. was just the preliminary fiscal plan.
Right.
He's coming back, what, in March with mm-hmm. the budget.
Mm-hmm.
From then, clearly through FinCom in April, and then you'll get your line-by-line review opportunity in May.
Mm-hmm.
Then between now and then, those discussions can be had for sure.
And to be clear, that you know, there is still the possibility that cuts are on the table. It's not ruled out. It's up to the council. You know, I'm not opposed. I think, you know, on one hand, we need to make sure we're fiscally responsible. But on the other hand, I think we need to make sure we have some stability for our staff. And, you know, they've been put through the ringer. And I think that, you know, we've got to find a fine balance for that. And, you know, the ultimate question is that if we do that, that's going to be hinging on this is a temporary stopgap. We're going to need a revenue solution to fix it. And that's right. really putting all our eggs in one basket to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think that's where from, at least in my observation, and Jamie referenced it as well, in the doc, he's given you the free cash history. Mm-hmm. And generally, it's in that 3-5-4 range, generally. To the extent that we can continue to do that, then it could be possible. And certainly, I would not advocate doing it on a regular basis. But holding aside, if we use the 2 this year and then maybe 2 next year, to at least give the time to put the strategy together, mm-hmm. which is one, mm-hmm. but then sell the strategy to the community, mm-hmm. I don't see how the strategy can't include one or more overrides. Mm-hmm. And clearly that's going to be the real hurdle to get to. Mm-hmm. How do we truly convince everybody that truly this structural deficit has been here mm-hmm. for years and years and years, and now there's no other way around it?
Right.
Because we can truly nickel and dime, but those are just nickels and dimes. They're not the millions.
Right.
And
I think I know this isn't in the meeting, but I think it just reserves repeating, because people, you know, ask, well, why do we know where I mean, we have inflation that is growing faster than 2.5%,
right,
plus new growth.
Correct.
And so, you know, the amount we're spending on services is, you know, flat, or, you know, we have to decrease because mm-hmm. inflation is going up and we can't maintain the same level of service. The other piece of that is, you know, healthcare is a big driver of inflation.
Major driver.
And so we are trying to save some money by going to the GIC, the Group Insurance Commission, which is a sort of a consortium of different towns, part of the state.
It's a state-run piece. So, right. As I understand, all the state employees in there, and a number of communities. So, from a risk management perspective, you're now going from, call it 2,000-3,000 of Franklinites, mm-hmm. now to call it, maybe it's 200,000, maybe it's 2 million people mm-hmm. in the pool. That just makes it a lot easier for the plans and the risk managers on the health side to start pricing accordingly, because it's all risk management. And as Jamie has mentioned, the last couple of years, unfortunately, we've been costing the health insurer, whereas before they were making money off mm-hmm. us because we were so healthy and not making a whole lot of claims. Mm-hmm. Things have changed a little bit, and that's just the way it is. But getting into a bigger pool theoretically should give us some better savings. Still, mm-hmm. it's not going to solve the healthcare issue. But we should, as healthcare continues to go, we should be getting less and less of an increase.
And I think the other problem is, I could be wrong about this, but not only is the issue that health insurance is going up, but we have of our workforce older people in the workforce. So that also is driving up healthcare costs faster than just average healthcare.
Right. And you get a couple of injuries, you get some other, you know, significant issues, and that affects that line. We're benefiting as well, because for the younger folks that are coming in as getting hired, apparently some of them are not taking health care. They're still on their parents' plan. Mm-hmm. So we're saving that way. Although from a risk perspective, it'd be better for them to be in the pool, because then they could offset it. So, I mean, there's pros and cons on all sides.
But I think, you know, in terms of the budget, there are some deviations from the previous fiscal year. But I think for the most part, I think the council is, you know, focused on level service, and we'll see how things play out in terms of, you know, whether we want to go below that or above that. But I think that, we have some tough choices to make, but I think we're ready to make them.
Yeah, I hope so, because I know at least from the school perspective, they've come in with a level service, assuming, and actually the health care has taken out of, and it's in the town. It's a net change for the town, because they were giving the money to the schools anyway. So now it's just staying on the town side. But the key piece is, at least from a comparison perspective, every department budget, school included, is now apples to apples, mm-hmm. where you always had to say, well, it would have been 2.5, mm-hmm. but it was 3.6 because of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Right. So now at least it's all on the same level playing field. And to their credit, having done the redistricting, taking, I think it was 3.2 permanently out of the budget, mm-hmm. and now they're coming in and having taken, two out of the prior, because of the overrides, they've taken significant millions of dollars out of mm-hmm. the school budget.
Yeah.
So
I think primarily that, I mean, I think that was a framing issue rather than anything.
Well, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think that was how it was framed, and I... you know, I'm disappointed that we had to do it because of that. But, you know, I think that, you know, I hope whatever helps us get to the ball, you know, down the field.
Over time, and that's where, at least from the historical perspective, I can add to that. I remember in the days when the first MOU came to take, I think it was the custodians, mm-hmm. and then the fields. And then there was the deal on technology mm-hmm. and facilities. The town has historically been trying to help the schools better manage their budget by focusing just on school educational mm-hmm. activities, mm-hmm. right? By assuming those that respectfully are kind of infrastructure mm-hmm. things, right? And somehow that got clouded or mm-hmm. got lost along the way mm-hmm. so that there's still this division between town and schools that I think is inappropriate mm-hmm. because there is no, and the managers, department heads will from time to time, I can't do this unless they're helping mm-hmm. me. The interrelationship is there.
And to your point, I mean, when I walked into the room, I saw Superintendent Jaguar sitting with all the other department heads. Yes. Are you having a cabinet meeting over here? Like, you know, what's going on over here? And they were really, you know, driving. So I think that, you know, I think the superintendent talked about how he's they're, you know, and the other departments said they're really trying to move forward and build bridges with each other, just like the council's trying to build bridges with them, the councilors. And I think that's really important. And I think, you know, there might be some bumps in the road, but I think that's, I'm hopeful that'll continue.
Yeah, because respectfully, and I think Rowan stepped up from historical as our archivist, and she's one in a department that, granted, in the grand scheme of things is, okay, how much critical is it to the daily work? But from a history perspective, those are our archives. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is still a critical piece. So that, as an example, they've been getting together, Library, Senior Center, the other departments, because to a certain extent, they're trying to figure out how they can help each other, considering that somebody may go, somebody may go, somebody may go. How do we continue to help do the work? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things, and I think, unfortunately, even when the finance and HR reorg happened in, if I recall, late 24, mm-hmm. because of other current events, the presentation to FinCom and Council got skipped. So people don't know behind the scenes how how the finance department and how the human resources department are so integrated, mm-hmm. providing backup to each other, town and school, and they're much more efficient. Mm-hmm. Because of that. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, saved money because of that.
Well, now I think we just had recently we had the – we did at one time have a separate benefits administrator for the schools and yes. for the town, and we merged those together Correct. Again too. So there's another way we're trying to make things more efficient for Correct. Taxpayers.
Right.
And I think that's the story that we got to tell is what we're doing to make things more efficient.
Right.
And we haven't always been successful at doing
no.
that.
No, and to go back to HR as an example, they've had an approval to fund to do digital applications. They haven't been able to implement it because they don't have the resources and time and bandwidth to implement it. And yet, in a digital day, anybody going elsewhere applies their applications through Indeed, LinkedIn, boom, 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 whatever. It's all digital. Paper to Franklin. That boggles the mind.
Wow, I didn't even know that, to be honest. That's crazy. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's good that we're trying to build a team. And the other thing, too, is that the department heads are also talked about how, you know, with the limited bandwidth of the town administrator's department, they're leaning on each other more when they don't have can't get an answer from Jamie right away. And it's, you know, it's kind of... You know, they're coping.
it's a coping strategy.
It's coping, yeah.
Yes. So. Absolutely. Yep. And I've been impressed with how they've coordinated. Mm-hmm. And let's hope that we don't lose some of the people mm-hmm. who have some of that, you know, institutional mm-hmm. knowledge, because that's another risk, right? Mm-hmm. The smaller you get, the risk is higher for certain people to leave because there goes that institution.
Well, I mean, knowledge. That was one of the problems with the whole instance at the school with the sewage overflow.
Correct.
Because the person who knew how to fix that was gone. And, well, mm-hmm. look what happened. So that's the risk of cutting, you know. So
it takes longer
yeah.
to figure it out.
Yeah. So should we move on to capital?
Might as well.
Yes.
Because they are somewhat related. There's two budgets, operational and capital.
I think the big thing was the thing we heard a lot from the council was myself included was, you know, there's certain things on the capital budget that we're asking for that recur every year.
Correct.
Like the big one we hear about was Chromebooks, but one of the things that I mentioned was there's also the police vehicles.
Absolutely.
Every year, same thing, same request. We got police armor, you know, tasers every year.
Right.
And that should be in the operating budget too. And to the chief's point, I guess a previous town administrator shifted that from the operating budget to the capital budget as sort of a budget gimmick. And that really hurt us in the long run.
And I think that's the key going back to we've had this structural issue for years, and there have been different strategies. We talked about the consolidation of custodians and facilities, et cetera, into town from schools. But yeah, that was another aspect of it. So because you had the free cash, and free cash because it's neither free nor cash, it's kind of one-time use things, you can put it aside so you have, you know, put $100,000 aside in 10 years, you get $1 million to get a new fire truck. Clearly, the prices have gone up considerably, but that was the intent. Put $100,000 aside, and then in 10 years, you get $1 million towards the new turf fields. That's the intent. But so using that kind of concept, technically, yeah, as much as it's an operational requirement, cars can be depreciated, so they can be capital. And we've got, oh, by the way, we've got free cash. Let's use that. So a lot of things like, and certainly it's been referenced, I don't want to skip them all, but between DPW, police, fire, even on the school side, you know, books.
Mm-hmm.
Now Chromebooks, because they're digital as opposed to hard copy paperback or paperbacks, are coming out of capital because that at least is an available fund for something. Oh, you buy it this year and it'll last 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you may buy, as in the Chromebook case, you've got to buy over 6 years because that's the bandwidth we have funding-wise to replace the existing set of Chromebooks that, 4,500 were bought 6 years ago because of COVID with some federal grants. And you got to chip away at it. But at some point in time, they still need to be gotten. And how do you do that? And if you don't have room in the ops...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Free cash.
In my position, and I tried to get this across, it didn't go so well. But, you know, I think ultimately when we develop that plan for, you know, what do we do about the town going forward, that should be part of the mix.
I don't disagree.
The council didn't quite understand where I was coming from. I did make a motion to try to say, hey, let's look at this, you know, and I didn't want to make it, you know, I don't think we want to talk about, you know, elections and that kind of stuff yet, but I do think that it should be part of the discussion. And I don't think, even though we voted it down, I don't think it should be. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen. I think it still should be part of the mix in terms of what we talk about in terms of you know, when we're looking to fund the budget. You know, I don't just want to keep treading water.
Right.
I want to be able to chip away at some of these issues.
There needs to be some action on that strategic plan because clearly the core and CLOR needs to be a representative. So at least at the joint budget subcommittee. So now you get school, FinCom, and some town council representatives put their heads together, come up with something that, you know, is respectfully, it's going to be a straw man, and it's going to have to go back to at least those three bodies and then get noodled and played with and modified potentially. And we're going to need to tell a story that how, you know, and by back in a napkin math, you know, you've got hold harmless. You've got a number of DPW projects that are regular ones. So aside from the water tower, aside from some of the other bigger ones, which theoretically, at least for me, those could get bonded. Road repair, right? We only get the Chapter 90. Put $1 million in. We had tried that $1.5 million in 2014. The voters said no.
Right.
So pull these together to make up some number. We've got to solve our structural deficit with some number. I don't know what that number is. There's going to be a
It's not even that number. I mean, the problem is even if you do get eventually that number will still be affected by inflation. you know,
I don't disagree. Right.
So even if you have a bigger number, eventually that's going to get eroded too.
Right.
So you know, ultimately, you know, some people in the community have said you have to have a culture around revenue, and that it's, you know, that this is something that has to be discussed, you know, regularly, mm-hmm. and that's not going to go away.
Right.
It's not going to be a one-time fix ever, you know, unfortunately. Oh.
No. And that's where, if anything, any next strategy, any next override plan needs to be for kind of multiple, because it's not going to be a one and done. Mm-hmm. There's no way. Mm-hmm. I mean, historically, we've had the trouble because we haven't been able to get others along the way. We had the one, and that was it.
Well, I remember specifically in 2007, when I was in school, you know, a group on Facebook, before Facebook was really a thing, got together, and they and there was people, you know, teachers and parents and other people in town, and they got it passed in 2007.
Correct. That was
2008 happened. It's like, we just had an override. Why do you need another one?
It had been the plan to do multiple at the time, yeah. And people wouldn't buy it.
Yeah. So I think we need to find a way around that, you know, going forward.
If that's, we need
if that's,
to tell
if that's the plan. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. That we need to tell the story better right. than the story's right. been told.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of capital, I think there was also a motion on the table to there was two different things. I guess there was the Chromebook issue. And to be honest, I think that personally, I'm not speaking for the council. But, you know, when I was in school, we didn't use Chromebooks. But at the same time, you had to wait, you know, you had to take turns using the computer because there's only one big, you know, desktop computer
right.
or computer lab. And you had it was really not efficient.
No.
And so now no. prices have come down. You know, it's more efficient. You know, I think there's evidence that shows that people who have internet access, you know, there's some people who still don't have internet access. They do a lot better in terms of mobility and economic success mm-hmm. compared to people who don't have internet.
Right. There's another whole separate non-financial right. discussion around right. screen time.
Right. Yes, that's a whole other thing. They're going to have screen time anyway. But yeah, you know, but there's also management tools they have to make sure that people are paying attention and that kind of thing as well,
correct.
At least in the middle school. And I think that, you know, people who haven't had that experience in school, like, well, what do you need these for? And I think that this is something that is part of the times of how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's necessary. And I think the other thing is, if you got rid of Chromebooks, you'd have inequity because you'd have some grades and some people who have them and some people who don't.
Right.
And then you're required to have them anyway. You're required to have at least enough on hand to administer the MCAS.
Great.
So it's already, you know.
Yeah.
And so the other option was, is some of the counselors were considering, it was just another thing around safety around certain cameras that were put up around the school and replacing mm-hmm. those.
Right.
And, you know, personally, yeah, it'd be nice to have those cameras. But the superintendent didn't put it in tier one. He didn't think it was as big a priority
correct.
As the Chromebooks. And, you know, I think, you know, the town administrator gave a big speech about how we are very safe. We live in the safest part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Crime rates have gone down. I think there was a reaction to some of the recent school shooting.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
that is a common item,
right.
far too common.
Right.
But I think, and from my observational perspective, mm-hmm. the word safety was more of a trigger point, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
because it was really a strategy that clearly a couple of years ago there was other significant steps to finish out all the cameras, to finish out the doorways, mm-hmm. et cetera. Now there's some that need to be replaced on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what the capital does. Mm-hmm. So you get tasers, mm-hmm. they go for 5 years, you mm-hmm. replace some each year, and then in 5 years you start the cycle over again.
Mm-hmm.
That was similar, as I understood it, for the cameras, and oh, by the way, related to that, the cameras send their video to a server, and the server mm-hmm. needs to be replaced
right.
as well. So that's where the expense
right.
was. And respectfully, the schools said, we can wait
mm-hmm.
potentially either maybe for June for the second pass
mm-hmm.
or next year.
Mm-hmm.
But the sixth graders starting in September need a Chromebook because, oh, by the way, when they come in, that's going to be their book for 6 years.
Right. And I think there was also a concern from Superintendent DeGeer that there's been a lot of work done to build those bridges between the schools and the town, and that this sort of Chromebook issue was being used as a wedge issue to kind of divide us again. And I think that, you know, I personally didn't get that from the comments, but I do feel like that, you know, I think that he felt enough, strong enough to believe that it was an issue. And I think that we got to be careful about how we frame things going forward.
I wholeheartedly agree, because you referenced my comment in the beginning, and I had hope, and I was squirming in my seat during those discussions, and I was losing hope as it was going. So, phrasings and the trustworthiness of the information. So if somebody can't trust the superintendent and the technology director, these are our priorities, we have a problem. Mm-hmm.
I think we do have to vet things, but I don't think that means we should, you know, completely disrespect their opinions either.
And phrase it such that it would be interpreted
right,
that way.
Right, yeah.
Right.
I think that, I think we got to be positive. And, I haven't lost hope as much as you maybe. I'm still hopeful. Got to have hope.
I get up every day, so I have hope.
Okay. You've got to have hope. Mustn't sit around and
there
hope.
Are some times when, things other happen, then you kind of lose it a little bit. But then, you know.
No, but I think the department heads are still strong. I don't think that, think that was, I didn't see that, I think, if anything, I think it reaffirmed the superintendent's commitment to that, which was good. So I think, there was that. I think, all the, at the end of the day, I think everything on the Tier 1 ended up getting approved.
Yes.
Which was good.
Plus the
seven. I think this we've talked so much about the budget, we forgot that we had a liquor license approved for Shaw's.
A minor detail, a technical detail.
Yes,
that's
technical.
One of the things that you get to do from an ABCC perspective periodically.
Yes, so.
Because you are the license holder.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. But I won't belabor that. And then we also had a veterans
donation,
which was great. Thank you to the family who donated that as well. That was very kind.
Yep.
And we also, this is the first time we had our new system for putting counselor comments after citizens' comments.
Right.
And so we'll see if there's a little bit more response, a little bit. So we'll see how that works. I think, of course, we're talking about the time limit for 10 p.m. or 4 hours. And, we did waive that. I think, if things were going to go to, we were expecting things to go a lot longer, it probably wouldn't have been waived.
You might have adjusted the agenda in that case.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The school committee has done something similar. Yeah. They don't have a time limit, but in spirit of time management, they've adjusted the thing from time to time.
Right.
So, it's a thing to do. Mm-hmm. And, you've got business to do and you have to do it and you've got limited time to do so.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, it's not just the council's time, but the staff of all the staff of stay and everything.
Then realistically, it's just human nature. Yeah. By the day gets longer, you're not going to be making as great a decision the longer the day gets.
Yeah. So, do you remember, was there anything in the town administrator's report other than the budget?
The key piece I took away from that was the press release that was coming out, and I did get a receipt of that today, so it'll be in Franklin Matters tomorrow. But the news that ISO New England changed our municipal aggregation rate. So while we were at 13.9 at the standard level, now it's going to be 15 per kilowatt hour. So we're still better than the standard national grid rate. It's still municipal aggregation. We still get all the benefits. There's a minor change as well. So if somebody did select kind of the greener option, I don't have that piece memorized. Right. That was a slightly higher
always,
one.
So there's always a premium to that.
There's always a premium to that. That also went up. I just don't have that in front of me. But the press release did come out this afternoon. It'll be on Franklin Matters. I'm sure it'll be on the town page. So,
and people, that's an opt-in thing. So people, if you are listening at home, want to opt into cheaper energy, you can still get a discount over national grid.
Right. And when it was first implemented, I think 7 years ago, everybody was opted in automatically. Okay. You needed to opt out. And legitimately, if you already had a solar system or already had a specific deal, then it made sense to opt out. Given some of the other gyrations in the market, if folks haven't opted in, this is still, from my understanding, the best deal to get. So consider it. I mean, you're now, and we've talked about the pool, the pool of Franklin now is bidding together as opposed to just Max and just Steve trying to get a good price.
Right.
So
market power, you know?
Market power, yeah. Absolutely.
And do you know if the town of Franklin for itself uses that system?
Yes.
They do, okay.
Well, and that's most of their own electricity comes from the solar panels up at the Abbey, mm-hmm. from what I understand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta try some of their chocolate sometime. I hear it's really good.
Yes.
I guess the other thing is, one thing that I've been hearing a lot on Facebook is about the distribution. The distribution is a lot more expensive than the supply. But, I mean, if you think of all those wires that have to go over miles and miles and all the transformers and, you know, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, have an engine that burns or a turbine that spins, but to actually transport that is a lot.
Right. Well, and that's where the other word is infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to put the wires somewhere, mm-hmm. in the electrical case, put the pipes in the gas somewhere. And it would be nice. Some of the newer developments certainly have them underground, so they're a little bit safer during storms. Trees don't fall and knock down wires. And if the wires are buried underground, a car, you know, running awry is not going to hit a pole and then kill the pole and drop the wires. Somebody still needs to maintain that. Mm-hmm. So there's another whole set of arguments around the funding approval for allowing the energy companies to recoup their costs and still maintain their shareholder statuses. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't go there.
Right.
But there, there are discussions
the whole thing is,
there.
Is that, I mean, first of all, there's the short-term versus long-term investment of these things.
Correct.
And what's the position of these utilities. But the other thing is, in economics, you know, we learn about, you know, you have private goods, which is, you know, you could buy and sell things in a free market, competitive market. But when it comes to utilities like phone or, you know, the grid, it doesn't make sense to have two sets of wires or three sets of wires delivering the same energy.
Correct.
It's expensive. So that's what we call a natural monopoly. And that's why you have one entity, and it is a monopoly, and that's why you have regulations on that monopoly. And there's different ways to do it. You could, you know, have it be public, and then you have a whole other set of problems with it.
Right.
Or you could say, okay, we're going to have you invest in it, but you can have shareholders, but we're going to control the rates so that you don't use your monopoly power to overcharge people.
And there are communities that have their own entity that provide the power.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got an aggregation deal, so we're doing it that way and taking the market advantage.
With the distribution specifically is the monopoly,
Right, and at least it's split out, so you can see the two separate costs. At one point in time, you just got one bill, and you didn't know what it was.
Right. And that was the original thing around competitive supplies. You could provide some competition, supposedly with low prices.
Right.
But the problem with that is people are getting misinformation from the people who are the suppliers. And in economics, when you have perfect information, you know what you're getting. But when you don't have perfect information, you get, you know, things don't work so efficiently.
Correct.
I actually wanted to ask you, Steve, is there any sort of urban legends or things around the interwebs that we could take the time to sort of combat or dismiss or to, you know, acknowledge that you've seen? I just there's always a lot of misinformation out there, and I always just want to see what can we do to just kind of combat it a little bit.
Nothing top of mind at the moment. I know at the beginning of the school year there had been that thread around the superintendent moving his office to Pond Street. That was debunked multiple times. Hopefully people understand that, yes, he has a space there for when he visits there, but it doesn't mean he moved his office. That's also goes back to a resource side on the schools where one of the admins that was supposedly in the budget ended up getting cut. So they're sharing admins, and admins are spending a couple of days here and a couple of days there. So he had to go there as well as part of, and get it. So, yeah, that's one of those. Hopefully it's put aside by now. I haven't heard something of that nature since. The biggest issue I think still out there is simply trusting the numbers and understanding the story and accepting that we're behind the eight ball, and we need to do something. And certainly we've already spent time on what we need to do.
Right.
But people are going to have to listen to the story once it's told with the official numbers, whatever that strategy is, and start trusting it, mm-hmm. because that lack of trust mm-hmm. is going to hurt us.
Trust isn't something that's an automatic. It's something that's earned.
It is earned over time. Yes. It can get lost in seconds.
Yes.
But it builds over time to get it.
So I think that we, you know, as a council, as an administration, as a school committee, as all of us have to show that we're doing the work. We're, you know, we're trying to do the best we can. We're trying to be most efficient we can, given the resources that we have. So, you know, trust is earned. And I am hoping that I, as a counselor, can earn your trust, and that, you know, that I'm doing what I can to make the best impact in our community. And I hope others will do the same with that, because mm-hmm. I think it's really important for us to do that.
No, I think it's very important for us to do that, and that's where in my role, certainly, kind of having these conversations with business authors, musicians, whatever, to share what's going on in the community, try to give that full perspective, because we have to do what we can do for our community and recognize that we're integrated with the rest of Mass, the rest of New England, the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And there are other things that are happening that, as scary as they are, don't fortunately affect us directly today. Mm-hmm. But we still need to be aware of them, because if they come, we're going to be in trouble too.
Well, I mean, one thing that we didn't talk about was the budget numbers from the governor's office, the cherry sheets.
Right.
And originally the Massachusetts Municipal Association, which Town Administrator Helen has been spending a lot of time with as a former chair, president, mm-hmm. trying to push for more funding from local aid.
Right.
You know, we were hoping to get a lot more funding. We got more than last year.
That's the early return apparently is that, yes, there's more than last year. There's some use of the fair share mm-hmm. funds, but still not to the level that would help mm-hmm. a number of the communities address the issues, because mm-hmm. we're not alone in addressing issues.
And I think one of the things, this might make me unpopular, but, you know, originally state aid, especially education aid, was meant to be sort of an equalizer. You know, you have the districts that can't afford to pay property taxes and can't afford to fund their education system, and they have the districts that are wealthy and can. And it was meant to level the playing field. And I think that gets lost sometimes when we talk, we need more state aid.
Right.
Well, you know, we you know, in terms of our EQV, or equity, you know, or the amount of property we have, or wealth as a town, we do have the ability to fund our school system, but we don't do it.
No.
So I think that when we talk about state aid and, you know, we should get more state aid, well, it'd be nice to get more state aid, but in terms of, you know, I would like to get more state aid, but in terms of those towns that are really struggling, they also probably should get some aid too.
Yeah,
you know,
that's going to be part of the valid discussion going forward, because, oh, by the way, Horace Mann was born here. Mm-hmm. He was the first superintendent of schools for the state of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, education is in the Constitution, mm-hmm. which is why the lawsuit, I think, in, what, 90, 91, mm-hmm. 92, resulted in Chapter 70 to try and provide mm-hmm. that equitable portioning. Mm-hmm. And I'll phrase it that way, because they've also revised it, and certainly since, what, 2010, 12, when Hold Harmless as a concept came, because after having gone through and benefited from our high growth and getting more and more, the formula changed, and, oh, by the way, they should have taken away currently $14 million that we should be putting in ourselves.
Right.
That's the Hold Harmless.
Right.
There's a relook at that in the in
DESE,
which may result in legislation, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That's still out there, so... Yeah, we need to be aware through our mm-hmm. legislative delegation, mm-hmm. Who has generally been mm-hmm. very good at mm-hmm. taking care of us.
Right.
They've created that Held Harmless for us and provided at least kind of the special ed, senior mm-hmm. circuit breaker, and transportation as opportunities where we're not held to that Held Harmless piece.
Speaking of that special education, I just want to give a shout out to the schools for being innovative with trying to bring more special education in-house, and that saves us a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And as someone who's actually been a product of the special education system in Franklin, mm-hmm. I'm appreciative of that.
Yes.
You know, I think that, you know, hopefully, I believe our state legislators are on the case, and I think it's on their radar. I'm hopeful that will continue,
mm-hmm.
or at least there'll be something to keep us going if things change.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of different variables we're playing with. And I think people You know, I'm very fortunate that the town services are as good as they are for the amount of money we spend on them. And I think that's, you know, I was talking to, I was talking to some staff members earlier, and they say, you know, this isn't going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something's going to give eventually. You can't mm-hmm. just keep being more and more efficient and less and less and less.
Right.
And so I think, you know, it's up to the citizens of Franklin. You know, what kind of town do you want? What are your priorities? What's important to you? And I think, you know, if you can't afford an ambulance, you know, that's not good for you personally. If you can't afford a police officer and you're in trouble, that's not good for you personally. If you can't, you know, if there's less people, you know, at the senior center, if there's less people in our school system, this all affects us. So I invite, you know, if you think there's concerns about the budget, look at it. Reach out to me. I'm more than willing to dig in, try to find out, you know, go to the Franklin website. You shoot me an email. I'm happy to answer. Yeah. I've been very responsive to folks sending me emails, so I'll be happy to get back in touch with you. But yeah, come to the finance committee meeting. I'm still the only person, I think I'm still the only person who's actually commented on had a concern about the budget and a FinCom meeting ever in the last decade.
Other than me.
Other than you. Other than you, Steve.
George doesn't count me.
Other than the press.
He doesn't count me being there.
And actually, the first one of the issues that I brought up was the Chromebooks. And I switched on that because sure. I listened to what they had to say. Mm-hmm. And I think there might have been another tech issue as well. But I think it was the cell phones, which I was concerned about. And, right. you know, they talked about it. They addressed it. And mm-hmm. Come to a FinCom meeting because all the stuff's right there and it's budget season's coming up. So if you really want to get in the weeds, find the waste. I eventually I want to have a challenge, you know. I wish I could award money to whoever finds, you know, whoever have a waste
buy,
in the
thing. Buy him a coffee or something.
Buy a coffee.
That's about what you can afford, perhaps.
Yeah. But it'll be, you know, please, you know, like I said, it's going to be tight. It's budget's very tight. And like I said, it would be helpful. I mean, I'm not just challenging you to, you know, I'm challenging people to challenge them. If there's something there, we got to mm-hmm. fix it. So
yeah, agreed.
You know, so
yeah. No, and I think there is so much to be grateful for. But yeah, we do have our challenges and we do need to get through this together via civil discourse. Mm-hmm. That's about the only way we're going to put our heads together and mm-hmm. the power of the heads can come out mm-hmm. and make us a winner going forward. So. Mm-hmm. That's my hope.
Okay. So is there any other questions you had for me, or are you all set?
Yeah, I think we've certainly spent more than just the recap of last night,
okay.
but I think it was appropriate.
Okay.
It was your first time here, given
yeah.
the new role in council.
So I hope you have me back.
I'm open to do that. I'm open to do that. And other councilors, I mean, you know, this is council quarterbacking, but
okay.
there's more than one quarterback.
Okay.
At a time, no, but there's more than one quarterback opportunity.
Okay.
So, yes. Well, thank you for doing this. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.